The National Broadcasting Company invites you by transcription to join The Tape. Hunter and the hunted, hound and fox, hawk and sparrow, cat and mouse. We in the Tahoe species have also joined the hunt. But who is to judge precisely which of us are hounds or foxes as we enter the chase?
The day I finally made the switch from Detective Sergeant Peter Peru to Detective Lieutenant Peter Peru should have been a happy day, because it's just what we've been waiting for, Joan and I. The promotion. Oh, how we chased that promotion. Maybe you didn't know it, but the difference between a sergeant's pay and a lieutenant's pay is $9.62 a week. Not much, but all the difference Joan always used to say that we needed to get married on. Well, now I've got the lieutenancy, and I've got the miserable $9.62 more a week. But now I haven't got Joan. What stopped us? A little piece of nothing, shaped like a dog collar, narrow as a postcard, and flexible like celluloid. A dictation tape. Yeah, that and a miserable dictating machine and the man who used them. It all started the night I went to pick Joan up at the office where she worked as a secretary. Generally, I knocked off duty about the same time she finished work, but if I was tied up on a case, she'd just stay on doing some freelance typing job she'd picked up from an employment agency. She only brought in a couple of bucks, but it was her way of chasing our wedding day while I chased the promotion. Hi, Johnny.
Oh, hello, sweetie. Be with you in a minute. Just finishing this tape. Oh,
come on, come on. The strong arm of the law has a weak stomach crying for food.
Just a minute.
Hey, I haven't seen you use your boss's dictating machine on your outside typing jobs before. What is it? A new job?
Mm-hmm. Just got from the employment agency today. I'm working for a writer after office hours now. Good pay, too.
Oh, yeah? What is it, a book?
Yeah, it's a novel. It's kind of gory. It's about a shy young man who's going crazy and knows it.
Oh? Who's writing it?
I don't know.
What?
I don't know. These dictation tapes are delivered to me every couple of days. I type up the pages and mail them to the agency.
Oh, that's simple.
Sure. South Pacific was dictated on tape that way.
And you'll never see your boss?
Never. He just sends my hard-earned pay with the tape.
Well, that should make for pleasant employer-employee relations. Now, what about the food department?
Oh, as a matter of fact, I'd like to see this man. He sounds brooding, sensitive, lonely. Real romantic type, Pete. I can't help wondering who he is, what he is.
Oh, fine.
Why, Peter, you're jealous. You're jealous of a voice.
Look, when you're ready to quit, let me know. I'll be in the coffee shop downstairs. Just poke your head in, okay?
Okay. I'll poke my head in on the end of a stick.
You'd better give that rider up, Joni, old girl. Give that rider up. But Joan Clinton didn't give her rider up. I should have stopped it when she went from simple interest to fascination. And as each day went by, she looked forward with more impatience to the delivery of the little tapes that brought her into a strange, one-sided communication with a man she'd never met. After a while, all she could ever talk about to me or to her office friends was her wonderful rider.
Oh, say, Annie, you want to hear something really good?
Oh, Joan, have a heart. I heard that tape twice this morning.
Oh.
Huh? How's that story coming? The one about the shy fella going nuts.
Oh, Annie's just wonderful. And today he added a postscript on the tape. He said when the book was finished, he'd find out who I was and he'd come to see me. Last night I typed up 27 pages, and on each tape I listened to, he sounded chipper and cheerful and happy. Oh, he was so gay, just like a little boy.
No night work lately, Joan. How come?
I don't know, Pete. I don't know. I suddenly stopped hearing from him. His last tape sounded so sad and strange. And that was 10 days ago.
I don't mind telling you that I was glad. Yeah. I'm no Gregory Peck, you know. I'm not even a fair Humphrey Bogart for looks. But when a guy finds himself competing with a voice coming off a dictation tape for his girlfriend, it's a little unsettling. So I was glad. Until I went to pick her up a couple of days ago at her office. I left my partner, Sammy Sampson, the squad car downstairs. And no sooner did I open Joan's office door...
Pete? Oh, Pete, I'm so glad you're here.
Joanie, what's happened? What's the matter?
Listen, Pete, to this. I got this tape tonight. The first one in 11 days, and it has something on it that... Oh, wait a minute. I'll turn the dictating machine on. Listen on these earphones.
Mm-hmm.
This should start as a new paragraph chapter. The driving force within him no longer raged. He was calm, for he knew precisely what he must do. He listened for a moment to the foghorns in the bay, and then he opened the shop door. He saw the frightened face of the old man staring up at him. He paused. Then, with great precision and almost no effort and absolutely no emotion, I took the sword from under my coat, and with it, I killed him.
What do you see?
Well, what do you want me to see?
This man dictated the story saying he listened for a minute to the foghorn and used the word he when he said he opened the shop door and he saw the man. But when it came to the violence, the killing, he said I took the sword and with it, I killed him.
Johnny, what are you driving at?
Pete, this man's been writing about someone who's lonely, moody, depressed, about someone who's going mad, someone who kills. He's not writing just about someone. He's writing about himself.
Lots of times a writer, to help his thinking, will mentally exchange places with his character, and I could understand how this writer had put himself in the place of the killer he was writing about. That's why the guy on the tape had said I instead of he, that's all. I read it someplace, and it made sense, but it took me 15 minutes of the biggest salesmanship I could deliver to bring Joan to the point where she agreed with me. Oh, here, Joanie, drink this and you'll feel better. Then I'll drive you home and I want you to forget all this stuff. You just haven't been your old self, sweetie.
Yes, I've been working too hard, Pete, and thinking of this boy. Oh, he's probably a timid little man of 50, married and henpecked and using the story as a relief for his inhibitions and frustrations. I'm sorry I've been such a jerk and I've been so unfair to you. Oh, Pete, how could I be so silly? Oh, Pete.
Forget it, kid. Yeah, this is worth it.
Hey, Peru!
Holy cats. I forgot all about Sammy Sampson.
Oh, it's my fault. I'm sorry.
Pete!
Here, hold this glass, Johnny.
Uh-huh.
And here, Sam.
Pete, I just picked up a general alarm on the squawk box in the car.
What is it?
Murder.
Where?
On the waterfront. An old man killed with a sword.
It didn't take long to check with the cops at the waterfront shop and find that facts meshed with fiction point by point. By my book, that much of a coincidence just couldn't happen. I asked the precinct to send a couple of men to meet Sammy and me at Joan's office, and the chase was on. Here was a chance for the promotion. Without even looking for it, the biggest case of my life was right in my lap. The only thing wrong was that my only lead, my hottest lead, was my own sweetheart.
Who is he, Joan? Where is he?
Oh, Sam.
She's told us 10 times, Sam. She doesn't know.
Someone must. Look, let's run this down. The Harriet House Employment Agency got Joan this typing job, right?
Right.
This writer mails 2 or 3 tapes in a plain white envelope to Joan's home every couple of days, right?
Yeah, but with no return address to give us anything to go on. Except this one's postmark shows it was mailed last night from the main Times Square postal station.
Oh, swell. The biggest in the city. That should be cute to trace. Okay. Then what?
After I type up the script, I send the pages back to the Harriet House Employment Agency.
Well, he must pick them up there. Andrews.
Yes, Sarge?
Get the squad car, Andy. Find a Mrs. Harriet House and pick her up. She runs the Harriet House Employment Agency in the drill building. Take it to her office. I'll meet you there in 20 or 30 minutes.
Right, Pete.
Now, look, Joan, were you ever given any reasons why he didn't have you come to him where he could dictate directly to you?
I wish he had me come to him. If he's mentally ill, if he's sick, I might have helped him.
Why, Joan, cut it out.
The woman at the agency only said he likes to work this way. You don't know him like I do. He's sensitive. He's easily disturbed.
Yeah, he's sensitive, all right.
You're not fair. You haven't proved anything yet. Why should you be so sure he's the killer?
Aren't you?
Pete, could it be possible, just possible, that this sword murder at the waterfront and the killing that Jones Ryder describes is just a coincidence?
Sammy, I just...
Sergeant Peru!
Andrews, I thought I sent you to find Harriet House.
She's been found, Sarge. A cleaning woman from her office building just called into headquarters. Harriet House is at her office, dead. Some nut killed her with a sword.
Any questions, Sammy? Joan? The once whitewashed walls and ceilings of the Harriet House Employment Agency would have to be whitewashed again. The job that was done there had certainly been that of a madman, but a madman who undoubtedly had lucid moments. Because the file folder that had held the scripts Joan Clinton had so carefully typed was found next to the destroyed body of Harriet House. Empty.
She's been dead for some time, even before the waterfront killing.
He's had a busy day. You know, this guy may have shown no outer symptoms of paranoia at all for weeks. And then maybe something happened yesterday or the day before, and off he went.
Pete, I've been through this joint from top to bottom, and there's not a single piece of paper, a note, anything that leads to this guy.
Now, you missed this.
What?
A dictation tape. It was halfway under the desk.
Let's see what it says.
Yeah, plug that machine in, will you, Sammy?
Okay. You got it on right, Pete?
Wait a minute. There it is. It's all right.
Dear Mr. Arthur, my name is Joan Clinton, and I'm the Miss Whoever You Are who's been typing up your voice.
Holy cats, it's Joan.
After listening to your voice for so long, I thought you might want to hear mine. I hope I'm not being presumptuous. I'd like to tell you that I think your book is going to be a really fine one. And I hope that once it's completed, we might meet for a drink to celebrate. I haven't received any tapes from you in over a week. And I hope those headaches that you mentioned from time to time haven't incapacitated you. If there's anything I can do to help, I wish you'd let me know. Good night.
Pete, is she in love with him? Is she in love with a voice? If she's holding out on us...
Keep your shirt on, Sammy. That was sent before tonight. She must have thought he'd pick it up when he came for his script. Let's get back to Joan's office.
Pete, I wonder if he did pick it up and listen to it before he left here.
Yeah. I wonder.
Joan, I want you to stop pussyfooting around. We're losing time, and you haven't told us everything we should know.
Now, take it easy, Sammy, and back up, or I'll back you. If you think I'll watch you give Joan a going over, you're nuts.
You listen to me, Peru. There's a maniac loose somewhere out there, and all out there are lots of men, women, and children. People are in line for murder if we don't get that killer first. Now, you get out of my way.
Pete.
Yes, Joan.
The murder he described on a tape we heard before?
The waterfront killing?
Yes. It's not the first murder he wrote about, and it's not the first time he substituted the word I for he. I've got copies of everything he dictated, but there's a tape on the machine right now. I got it 3 weeks ago. I was listening to it again. You'd better hear.
Hello, Princess. This will be short. I'm tired. The headaches again. Ready? When the ferry docked, the boy got off with the rest of the passengers, but he was able to keep himself hidden as he followed the girl home. At her door, I stopped her. The street was black and quiet. She shrank away from him, and the rage that began on the ferry burst through full bloom. When she started to run, I caught her and held her. She whimpered. I ripped the little fur collar off her cheap brown cloth and rammed one end of it into her mouth. Then I stabbed her in the back. He put her away and went to an all-night movie and then home. Well, it's all for tonight, Princess. Once I get rid of these headaches, I'll be able to write more each day. And we'll get this book done more quickly. And we'll sell a million copies and start another. Good night, Princess.
Operator, get me police headquarters. Give me homicide. Hello, Johnny, this is Pete Peru. I want this on fast. See if you have a card in your unsolved murder file. Victim, young girl, blonde, wearing a brown cloth coat with fur collar at time of death. Stabbed in the back. Oh, about 3 weeks ago. Call me back. Yeah, thanks.
Pete, do you think he might be planning another killing like it? He wrote the waterfront killing before he committed it, you know.
He didn't write about Harriet House before he killed her, did he? A habitual criminal has a definite pattern, and you can follow it. How can you anticipate what a madman will do?
I don't know.
Hello. Yeah, Johnny, this is Peru. Shoot. Got it. Thanks.
What is it, Pete?
Well, there's nothing in the unsolved murder file, but Johnny checked missing persons. They reported a blonde girl of 19 disappeared 3 weeks ago, Muriel Graham. She was last seen alive by some friends who put her on the New Jersey-New York ferry. She never got home. When last seen, she was wearing a brown cloth coat with a little fur collar. 15 minutes later, we stood in the blood-drenched waterfront shop staring at the body and the double-edged sword. Sammy Sampson, New York, partner, a husband, a father, and a cop for 22 years, clenched and unclenched his fists in his pockets. Then together we turned to our detachment of detectives and uniformed police and set the citywide chase into full power.
Mike, get photographs of that sword. Take a detail of men and hit every antique shop, every museum, every kind of shop or institution that can give you a lead on this sword and its owner.
Okay, Sarge.
You, go back to Joan Clinton. She has a copy of this killer's script. Have it mimeographed immediately. Then take a detail of men and go to every publisher in the city. Have them read it to see if they can recognize the style of any writers that they know.
Here's a list.
You two, as soon as it's morning, round up the sales managers of all the dictating machine outfits in town. Get them into headquarters by 10.
On your way, boys. You take this envelope down to the lab. See if you can lift any prints.
All right, you two. This job isn't nice. Remove that sword and take that poor guy down to the morgue. A homicidal maniac was loose and raging in a city of 7 million. But by noon, the manhunt had blanketed the city.
Sergeant Peru, I got a list showing the names and addresses of all the people in the entire city that company sold dictating machines to.
Okay, thanks, Andrews.
Yes, sir.
Our friend probably did his writing from home. Eliminate all the business addresses on this list and have your details start their investigations in the residential areas first. Check the salesmen. See if they recall selling dictating machines to anyone who might be a writer. In the meantime, reports started coming in. None of them good. The detectives covering the antique shop got a lot of offers from dealers to buy the sword when it was found, but none of them had ever seen it before.
Hey, Sarge, not one of the publishers could recognize any particular style in the script.
Okay, that's all.
Wait a minute. A number of them offered to buy it. You see, the publicity value is great. Even though the construction is erratic, the dialogue vague, the...
Thank you, Clifton Fadiman. Now get back to your beat. The chase continues through the rest of that day and the night. The populace of all the five boroughs in the city, not knowing where the killer prowled, cleared the streets by nightfall. It was a Jack the Ripper panic. Nightclubs, theaters, and movie houses lost business, and the papers screamed. And to Sammy Sampson, myself, and the other jokers on the job, on duty and off duty were only figures of speech. Then we got our first break. The killer contacted Joan Clinton.
I got it in the late mail.
A tape.
Where's the envelope it came in?
Here.
Mail last night. There's your postmark, Sammy. Ansonia Postal Station. That's almost in the center of town on the west side.
Yeah. That section runs from about West 59th Street to West 74th or 75th Street. And from Fifth Avenue to the North River.
Hello, Homicide. Johnny, Peru. Get on this right away. Get that list of people who bought dictating machines in the city. Get it now down to just those people in the Ansonia section of Manhattan. I want that list. Then call in men working on the antique shops, the ferry boats, the Navy Department. All the men we've got on the case. Put them all in the Ansonia section. One of the people in that area using a dictating machine is our man. Right.
Pete, listen to this. This is the tape Joan got.
Thanks for your little speech, Princess. I listened to it. You're very kind. I'll talk for you. Oft in dreams, tender and smiling, thy fair face cometh to me. Oft in dreams, thy lips beguiling, murmur soft, you love but me. Oh, my beloved one, you love but me.
Joan, listen, I don't know how I let you get into this, and I don't know what the score is between you and me right now, but there's a murderer, Sammy, and I have got to find. But for you, there's a lunatic lover you've got to stay away from. I'm putting some cops near your house. He may try to get to you. If he does, I don't know if he'll try to love you or kill you. But it can be easily both. It took time to bring our men in and concentrate them in the Ansonia section. The Ansonia section of Manhattan is a mixture of enormous apartment houses and filthy slum areas. The number of people packed into this one square mile easily exceeds 250,000. On top of this, the number of people there owning recording machines proved to be many times larger than we anticipated. And the work of finding and questioning dragged slowly. When night fell that day, Joan and I piled into Sammy's squad car for a lift home.
I'll drop you off first, Joan. There's a plainclothes man in front of your apartment house, so you don't have to worry. But keep your door locked and stay near a phone. If this guy doesn't go berserk again tonight, I think we'll have him by morning.
Good night, Eve. Sammy.
Good night, kid.
Joan, is there anything you want to tell me?
No, Pete, there's nothing.
Well, I'll call you a little later, then. Now get some rest.
I will. Good night.
Evening, Miss Clinton. We'll see that no one gets in to harm you.
Thank you, officer. I'm sorry to cause you trouble.
For the last 20 minutes, Sammy. I got worried. Now she doesn't answer the doorbell.
I'll get this open in a minute.
She's not in the bedroom.
She's not here.
Well, look, her bag is over here. So is her coat.
Those couch pillows half on the floor. May have been a struggle.
Where's the cot you had on duty?
He's checking the basement. Oh, here he is.
I'm sorry, Sergeant. I didn't think she tried to slip out. I was just looking out for someone trying to get in, you see.
What'd you find?
There's a door in the hallway. It leads down to the basement. It connects with the apartment house next door. She must have slipped through it and out the back door of the other building. No one saw it.
Did you ever think that somebody came in just that way and snatched her out?
You should have checked.
Well, I...
Forget it.
What do you think, Pete?
No, I'm afraid to, Sammy. I'm afraid to. Hello. Homicide. Johnny, I want you to put out a description alarm for Joan... What? Good. Holy cat, when? Listen, get all the prowl cars in that district and verge on that block and tell them to be on the lookout for Joan Clinton. I think he's got her as a hostage, if he hasn't killed her.
What happened, Pete?
Missing persons closed their file on Muriel Graham. They just found her in a refrigerator in a basement on the west side. She died from dozens of knife wounds in the back. She was still wearing her little brown cloth coat and the fur collar was stuffed in her mouth.
You got the address?
Yeah, right in the middle of the Ansonia section. With Sammy at the wheel, it took only 4 minutes to get to the broken-down brownstone. The neighborhood was alive with fear and excitement, and the little janitor who found the body of the girl in his basement was telling his story for the 10th time.
I'm going to open the refrigerator door, and Mamma Mia...
Okay. Do any of your tenants use a dictating machine?
A dictate? A what?
It's a recording machine. Businessmen use it to dictate letters. It records the voice. Writers use it, too.
Writers? There's a loony in the 3C. He stays a writer. Always he carry the book. Always talking to himself.
Talking to himself?
Yeah, lots of times I go past his room. No one is there but him. But he's a talker a mile a minute.
That's him. Tom, get that crowd back. Get some men in the back of the building and a couple on those roofs. Sam, you come with me. Now, you two lay back and cover it.
Everybody call him a lunatic and he's talking. He's a crazy.
Why didn't you tell the authorities about him then?
Why? Well, what's the matter? He's no hurt to nobody.
Look, mister, you've been a great help, and thanks, but you'd better stay here. Come on, Sammy.
3C must be on the neck line.
I don't move, Sam. There he is at the top of the stairs. Put down that sword, fella, and we won't hurt you.
He's coming down, Pete.
He's still got that sword.
Watch out, Pete! He's over!
As I stepped over the lifeless body of the killer who terrorized the city, I realized he was only a boy, no more than 23 or 24, and in death his calm face showed none of the violence that had twisted his poor brain. I raced up the stairs to 3C. I kicked open the door. Joan Clinton, the girl I'd loved, the girl I was going to marry, the girl who wanted my promotion even more than I did, sat solidly, mechanically at a typewriter. At her side was a dictating machine, and in it a tape was slowly spinning. Her clothes were disheveled. She was completely white, and her pupils showed she was near complete shock. Joan. Joan, are you all right? What happened to you?
He's dead, isn't he? Just a boy. He made me come to finish his book. He said he'd give himself up if I promised to finish it. He was completely lucid for a while. Now, everything's settled, isn't it?
Joan, he didn't do anything. He didn't hurt you.
Hurt me? Hurt me? He was very gentle. Really very tender.
As the earphone slipped from her fingers, I picked them up and listened to the tape spinning over and over again its final sentence.
Good night, princess. Good night, princess. Good night, princess. Good night, princess.
The Chase was created and written for the National Broadcasting Company by Lawrence Klee. In tonight's cast were Grant Richards, Anzie Strickland, Ann Thomas, John Raby, John Gibson, Walter Black, and Guy Rett. The Chase was directed and transcribed by Dan Sutter. This is Arthur Gary speaking.
Great chimes mean good times on NBC. In coming weeks, there will be some changes. Tuesday the 26th marks the return to the air of Cavalcade of America. Thursday, August 28th, welcome back the King of the Cowboys, Roy Rogers.